Okay, so we have a number of things on the agenda tonight, so I'd like to get started. Welcome to the regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Facilities Committee on Wednesday, June 22nd. I'm Deb Crossley, Chair of the Committee, Councilor from Ward 5. I'm joined by Susan Albright, Vice Chair of the Committee, Councilor from Ward 2. Vicki Danberg, Councilor at Large from Ward 6. Cheryl Lappin, Ward Councilor from Ward 8, and our committee clerk, Nadia Khan. We have a couple of public hearings for grants of location. We're going to begin with those. They should be pretty straightforward, so I have agreed, if the law department is here, that we will then move to the late filed item, which has to do with an easement for the LHC. So with that, the first item is 204-16, EverSource Energy petitioning for a grant of location to install conduit across Willow Street to Sumner Street to provide underground service to the fire station at 31 Willow and Ward 6. Who is here to present this petition? We'll lay that on the table.
Okay.
Okay.
And I'll go to the next item. It's 205-16, Juan Suckerman, petition for grant of location to install a main drain extension from a proposed manhole in Drumlin Road. Trenching southerly to another manhole is Ward 8. You must be Mr. Suckerman.
I am. Hi.
Good evening.
Good evening.
And you're, let's see. Your
address? 30 Drumlin Road.
30 Drumlin Road.
Yep.
So, you're representing yourself, and you're requesting, tell us about your project.
So, there is, you know, we bought a house a year ago, mm-hmm. and in the front of the house, I mean, I'm an accountant, so I'm going to do my best to sort of, that I mean to sort of hold the water coming into the property.
Stormwater.
Okay. The property is but very hilly, backed up to sort of that lean, so we're on a hill.
Okay.
And there seems to be leaking on the side of the street. It's containing all the water.
Okay.
So what this
proposes uphill?
Yes.
Yeah.
So what this is proposing to do is take the water from essentially the front of this house. Into like a drain manhole, which unfortunately the nearest drain manhole but quite far down the street.
So the house was designed with stormwater retention system underground to the filtration.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's not big enough, or it's engineering expertise.
Yep.
In addition to, we have
When the house was permitted, it was designed for that filtration system to take the impervious of the surface.
Right.
Unfortunately, your foundation gin was also added to that system, which is not accounted for. Because you cannot model groundwater accurately. You can model surface water accurately because we know how much rainfall comes over a 100-year period. But groundwater we can't model unless you're modeling well throughout the area. So what's happening is the system is breaking out during the winter time, and in the pre-thaw cycle, we're getting icing on the street and on the sidewalk. To mitigate that, the gentleman's proposed to extend the drain main. I believe about 100
feet or so.
100 feet, I believe it was.
Yeah.
With the reinforced concrete pipes that the drain made, all that's existing in the street. We'd meet that standard, and it would be restored to the city standard as part of the trench. The road would be past the moratorium, so it would be a permanent patch. So it would be a foot on either side of the trench itself.
So this is an expensive solution, and does engineering feel this is a better solution than trying to create additional storage on site?
It is, because groundwater is high there and it's breaking out of the soil itself.
So
to arrest that, we're going to pipe it and
take
it all into the ground and change the city system.
Okay, so this is a solution that you would prefer to take?
Right.
Okay, any questions from the committee?
So can I just ask, how does it work?
So it'll be where it breaks out, actually here is it. So the system is up in here, underneath this area. What's happening is it's breaking out. So what would happen is there would be a hard pipe connected to the system to a drain manhole on the site. Overflow connection to a new drain manhole, which would be this. And everything would be connected underground. There would need to be no more breakout, and there would be no more icing on the sidewalk or the street.
So it's attached to the
the system on the site.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
It's all high pipe.
And John, I missed when you said the reason that that there's overflow, that there isn't capacity, was that something else was connected to it. Can you just explain that a bit?
The system that's shown in this rectangle pattern right there was designed for all the impervious area of the roof and the driveway.
Yeah.
But what happened is construction went on, the contractor connected a foundation drain to it.
A foundation drain.
Right. And foundation drains are not typically, it's added, but it's hard to model that because you never know how much groundwater is in the area.
Mm-hmm.
We know because of weather charts and whatnot, we know 100 years long, that it was almost 7 inches of rain to fall.
Mm-hmm.
But on the ground, we don't know how much groundwater shifts.
Sure, yeah.
But what happens is he connected that foundation drain to it and overwhelmed the system.
What in the original plan for that drain to dump out?
Ideally, that would have gone to another subsurface system, but because of the high groundwater and the slope of the material, the topography is just breaking out.
Would it be less expensive to put a whatever you call it, you know, big tank with rocks in it that would go into?
The problem is because of the soil, because of the high water table and the slope, it's still going to break out, and ultimately it'll be a problem down the road.
Mm, okay.
So it's just a rest of that situation. It's a safety issue. And it's a concern for the neighbors as well in the city.
So you're confirming that there's no more room on the site for additional on-site filtration?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions?
Cheryl, this is my ward. I'm your
counselor. Hi. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you.
I will move approval.
Okay.
Does this require a hearing?
Yes, it does. you're so good at reminding me that you're involved and then I forget. So, questions around the room, but I'll ask the question. Is there anyone here to speak for or against this petition? I know everyone in the room, seeing none, unless somebody would just like to have something to say. Seeing none, correct, I will close the public hearing, and now I'm looking for a motion.
Motion to approve.
All in favor of approval. It's unanimous. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
You might want to have one at 10. Yeah, I'll use that one. Okay.
Next is item number 109-16C, which is, again, Telco Partnership CDA Verizon Wireless petition for ground location for test wireless communication equipment to poles. It's just a utility pole. We have one pole left, and we are joined by
Melissa Pace is the same little dude for Verizon Wireless.
So we're going to miss you.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I wish if I was
two more applications.
Excellently.
Not a double pole site, so I'll be back yet again.
So what remains before us is the Craft Street location. And
yes.
Can you update us on the status of the condition?
Yes, I can, and unfortunately, the petition is the same as last time. That quirky little stub is still there. I think when we spoke last, and I believe I think it was from you, but please correct me if I'm wrong, a few manuals said that the stub was identified as EverSource's problem, and EverSource had agreed to take care of it. But they had not yet. So,
last time we were joined by Commissioner Moore from our Public Buildings Department, as well as Alan Mandel, our city solicitor, who I thought had agreed that we were going to inquire with ISD to see if there was any rationale for having them cite the condition. I'm guessing there wasn't, but I did not hear back. So, Alan, I didn't put you on the spot, but I'm going to. Yeah. Is this in our court, just to say? Or, I mean, I think
I hate to postpone this again, not having resolved the particular condition. So everybody remembers this. There's a little bit of a stub of a pole still sitting
there. Yeah, on top of the two brackets that are holding it in the air.
Right. Does anyone else feel like they're getting blown out of the room?
Yeah.
Can
yeah.
we just kind of turn this down? Just turn it down a little, please. So, what is the will of the committee? Does anyone have any comments or questions on this?
My question is, what's our recourse if, since Eversource hasn't taken care of it yet, and if we give the grant a location, may have less motivation than they have now to do anything about it. And I hate to postpone this again, but I'm inclined to want to postpone it until they come back here, come over there and fix this thing.
I'm going to recognize the Commissioner of Public Works, Jim McGonigal.
Now that we understand that Eversource is going to meet with them monthly, we have made great headway. We have to bring the recommend pay with Eversource. We need to address that on monthly
meetings. So you're comfortable that if we go ahead and approve this, that you'll be able to get them to remove that? Okay.
When is your next meeting? Do you know the date? Is that after our next meeting?
After.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're 11.
I thought we could approve it on second call, but.
Second Thursday, at least.
Mr. Mandel?
There's a couple of calls in the Friday morning. I'm hoping the other person will be there.
A double cold meeting.
Is that open to
are you
anyone interested? You know where that
I think that's the Ward 7 resident. I'll say that my information is that this this is Verizon Wireless. I understand that the condition of the second pole belongs to Eversource. Unless they're concerned about a structural violation of some kind, or that we're told, you know, this pole can't take any more weight. Your equipment until this piece is removed, and I'm not hearing that we have that.
We don't know that.
You don't know that either way, though.
Thank you. Did you speak with Eversource?
I did not speak with you.
So who did? You know, because you said that you thought they were going to remove it.
And I believe Attorney General had the conversation with
Eversource several times. The first time I talked to them, the
belief was the remainder of
the pole was Verizon.
So
when they
took
the
steps,
it came back to me and said, our mistake, it wasn't Verizon itself. Our meeting? Eversource. Eversource. So it's them and they said they would do it? Or it's just, yes, it's us?
Yeah, I mean, there's all those things where I'm talking to people who don't have direct control over when the work gets done. That was with often successful in getting some things accelerated.
You have direct control over who gets the work done. I assume you do.
Yeah, our contact is John.
I'm going to recognize Jane Mark, Director of Operations.
Madam Chair, I should send an email on who should do our point of contact on that.
Okay.
He's very responsive on Vice Chair. Okay.
I'm wondering about, I have the language, approving this subject to confirming that there's not a structural issue by removing this double pole, and that maybe by that time we can have the darn thing removed.
Question. If the next meeting is on the 14th, do you know when the proposed wiring would go up? before the 14th or at what you want to do here, whatever that is.
We have to pass it on the 11th.
Oh,
yeah. Our next meeting is not until July.
No, I know, but I'm wondering whether by the meeting on the 14th that can be taken, the
everything
taken down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know that's not for you to
answer,
but...
Okay, I'm going to recognize Lenny.
So why don't we just start the subject of second call and ask the commission to get back to us prior to the meeting on the 11th to see if there's been success.
Okay.
You want to make that motion?
I did.
Not even did you get that? Well, I'll approve it subject to the condition that there's confirmation that the pole, double pole can either be removed and or not prevent the hazard. Subject to second call.
With the commissioner getting back to
it.
And also, Alan has a meeting on Friday, so.
Right.
Okay. So we have a motion made by Councilor Gentile to approve subject to those conditions. All in favor? Thank you. Yes, okay. I want to recognize that we've been joined by Councilor Gentile from Ward 4 and Councilor Gentile Glaser from Ward 3, also for the record. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Faber. And Vanessa, there's going to be discussions, but I won't speak to the ignorance of your process. Subject to committee call, what does that mean?
So we are just one of the substantive committees of the full council that we recommend. Our disposition of the item to the full council, and that when the full council meets, most of the items that we recommend one way or the other go through on the first call. If second call means there may be a discussion on the item.
Okay.
Thank you for this.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks so much for joining us.
You're better.
Anyone show up for item number 204-16, which is about Willow Street and the fire station?
You want me to go?
That actually is a lateral, but not me, Grant.
Okay, so this is Eversource Energy petitioning for a grant of location.
Right, I think they misunderstood the process. If you look on the drawing, it just shows a lateral coming from the mail directly to the fire department.
So are you wanting to withdraw the items and vote for any NAS items?
Okay, I'll vote to NAS.
Everybody?
Direct service connection.
Okay, because it's a direct service connection that you don't need again.
Correct. That's all the commission
Okay. All right. Everybody get that? All right. So we have a motion to NAM this item.
Just
one item
seems to have something to offer.
Go ahead. It was me. We'll thank you later. Thank you. Did not need to say that. But it's okay. So we have a motion to NAM the item from Pastor Jamber. All in favor? It's unanimous. 6-0. Okay. I'd like to invite Solicitor Rita Young to join us for the late file item that was on, is it the 26th or this was on our desk on Monday night. And this item is 619-16, which is His Honor the Mayor recommending that the City Council acquire a temporary construction easement via an eminent domain taking in the private lands of 373-396 and 404 to 406 Elliott Street, about 135 feet, and award damages to be determined to Chatham property. My understanding is that we want to initiate this because we've not yet been able to come to satisfactory agreement with the owner, but we're still working on it. That's exactly right. There's a couple of other developments, and I want to thank, first of all, the council for putting this on at short notice. I really appreciate it, but we got to the 11th hour, and it's clear that we couldn't get an agreement. We needed to have this taking in order to access the abutments of the bridge. And Mr. Smith can speak more specifically as to why we need it. And in addition, I want to thank Councillor Gentile for attempting to intercede with the owner and see if we can get to yes more rapidly through some personal persuasion that I lack. but we have made progress with the owner. It's just, we're very, very close coming to an agreement here. Some of the things that have happened in the interim besides the councilor speaking with the property owner is that the commissioner went out and determined yesterday that we don't need to have a temporary construction easement for 394 396 Elliott Street. We only need it for the lot that's immediately abutting the bridge, which is 404 and 406.
Okay.
And again, I also think that we may need it just for a 6-month period in terms of how long we need it. So those are two items that would be offering as amendments to what we've actually adopted. We reduce the amount of the length of the construction easement clear what the duration of the construction easement would be. And if you need to add, if you want more information about why we need it, the commission can speak to what it's going to do for the construction.
Okay.
I would like to hear that before we open it up for questions, please.
Sure, thank you. So if you look on the drawing, there are two properties that are impacted here. There is a driveway right here. Well, the reason we need this access is that along the bridge here, this is all the stone wall. So we need to have access for workers just to come in here and do some handwork along the bridge. There won't be any equipment coming in here. So that's why we agreed not to ask for the easement on the second property, because really we're just bringing hand tools and personnel down along here. Any air compressors or any power hand tools that will be needed will be loaded from the top of the bridge, so we won't be impacting the area at all with any equipment.
Okay.
Is there any cost to this?
One of the things we need to do is get an appraisal as to what the value of a temporary construction easement would be, and it might be essentially nothing given how minimal it is. So you would probably put an addendum or potato advantage award on a taking of $0, which would also be rejected by the property owner. I mean, that's a separate issue from any damage that we actually do to the property. That's not actually covered in an imminent domain taking as part of the damages. That would be a separate issue, and that's one of the things that we've been trying to sort out with the property owner. What happens if you damage the property, and what happens, what the hours of construction would be, how we would impact the ability of the tenants, these are rental properties, to access it. So there are many, many other things in terms of operations that the tenant, that the owner is very concerned about, rightly so, that aren't part of the cost of the taking per se. But we do need to sort through those issues, and if we have to go through a taking, it might be a friendly taking, and I probably put a value on that of zero, but that does not mean there isn't a potential cost out there to the city if the city does something to damage the property, and I'd probably turn around and look to the contractor to pay for that damage, because it's going to be the contractor out there doing it. So, again, that's how the dollars would lay out, but that's in the future.
My only other question is, what are the hours that the contractor would be using this easement?
They're consistent with our noise ordinance.
I believe right now they're working 7 to 3:30. They may increase to 10 hours for certain portions of the project, which will allow, but for the most part, it will just be 5 days a week, 8-hour days. We may see 10-hour days. We did offer an incentive to the contractor to finish the project early.
Right, and one of the things that we had included in the draft right of entry, which we're still negotiating with the property owner, was to make it clear that tenant would be able to have access at any point. There might be a reasonable delay if we have to move equipment out of the way, but it sounds like from what the commissioner is talking about in terms of the type of construction that's going to go there, any delay would be just getting guys out of the way with their hand tools to let access go in and out.
Any other
comments or questions for me?
You mean access because it's a road? Why would they need access upon the bridge all of a sudden from the apartment?
Well, I think we're talking about access to their driveway. We would not be impacting that at all.
You wouldn't be stopping the driveway?
No.
Barring some catastrophe, but no, normal operations will not require us to block any part of that driveway.
But having said that, what you do with the owner is agree that you're not going to do it anyway. Mm-hmm. You don't need it, but you've made a clear assurance to them that they don't, and you tell them what we'll do if something happens, like we'll set it out of the way. So.
Right. And then, Commissioner, I remember when you first came in about this bridge, talking about how we didn't need, well, we thought we might, but then we didn't need any easing or access and couldn't get it. Did we not foresee this issue?
I think you might be confusing needing to have access to working on the bridge with. There had been a discussion about trying to create, or whether it was possible to create, alternative travel lanes, and that
no,
was
it was about
possible.
The work. I think I thought it was about the work.
You're right, Ron. So there was talk of needing an easement if we had to move the bridge, add another bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking at options.
So that we didn't have to stop traffic.
Okay, Madam, so then my question is simply, did we not foresee, so that we could have thought about this before?
In hindsight, usually this type of entry isn't an issue, so engineering didn't see it as a problem. Even in initial discussions, it didn't sound like it was going to be a problem, but now we've gotten to the point where we need to have entry. We don't want to delay the project going forward. This isn't delaying it right now, but it will eventually. So yes, in hindsight, we probably should have gone through this process.
So since this is your award, I'd be glad to meet approval. Mm-hmm. I'd be happy for you to do so. I'm going to recognize Wendy first.
So I think I could explain my involvement, because if there ends up being an agreement and we don't have to do a taking, I think the committee should know what's being discussed, so it's not a surprise to you down the road. Because my preference is that there not be a taking, and we work this out continually. So I get involved because I know the owner of the property, and so I call the owner to see if, you know, we could try and get over the last hurdle, which is a monetary hurdle. What he explained to me was his concern is that if he gives the city an easement, then technically he is violating the terms of his lease with his tenant. And he doesn't want to be in a situation where somebody uses that to up and, you know, leave him without rent for a month or two unexpectedly. So in the event that something like that were to happen, all he's looking for is to be made whole. If he's out of pocket $500 or, you know, whatever, he would like to make sure that he gets reimbursed. He said he has leases with people, the whole process would be totally transparent, and you know, he would show the city and give the documentation to prove that he has been harmed financially. I know, I take his word at that, he has a lot of properties around the city of Newton and other places. So what I said to him was, the problem is that what you've proposed so far is open-ended, and the city can't possibly enter into an agreement where we don't know how much money that might be. So they understood that side of it. So I said, well, why don't we talk about a cap? And the short story is, I believe that we have an agreement in principle that the city's exposure would be for no more than $10,000. You know, if in fact they were out rent money, and I need to explain to him, and I had called a couple of times today, but, you know, did not hear back, which surprises me a little bit, because I spoke to him at least three times yesterday, and he was probably getting hold of him, so I don't know what happened, but, because I needed to explain to him that the law department has the authority to spend $4,999 from their judgment and settlement account, and so they could deal with it, okay? But that if it was more, I don't know if it would be seen as separate claims, and they could do two or three claims that, you know, go out to $8,000 or whatever. So that there's the possibility that there may need to be council action for more than $4,999. I just want it to be up front with him. I don't think it's going to ever get there, but I just want you to know that this is the kind of a discussion, because if 5 months from now we come back to get, you know, $3,000 or whatever, I don't want people saying, well, you know, we didn't know that this would be arrangement.
So how long are we going to have this? How long would you like to use me for?
He uses for 6 months. The issue, again, part of the dilemma here, and one of the reasons why this is delicate and there needs to be a path, is that, in a sense, the grant of the easement for construction isn't what's going to cause the tenant.
Right, that is my move.
I understand that it would arguably give an additional legal ground for the tenants to say you violated the terms of the lease, which is one of the reasons why I mentioned today that there might be the ability to do a friendly taking, in the sense that the landlord, the property owner, could say, I didn't have any options here, or they were going to take it, and so it's not a violation of the lease. I'm sure that the lease, if it's a standard commercial lease, is going to say that it's subject to actions of imminent domain and that kind of thing.
So then if we do that, what would that mean?
That's still a discussion, but this property owner has always been concerned from the very get-go that his tenants are going to be upset about the construction itself, just like everybody else.
Well, there's a lot of construction in the city, and everybody sometimes is near people, but nobody gets compensated.
I understand that. These people are, first of all, they're very close to the construction, but second of all, and they're renters, so they're not going to be, they've got the capacity to move, whereas owners don't. And the other thing is that, quite candidly, we lose this easement, one way or the other. And if I don't come to an agreement in terms of the Cotanto on the damage taking, because I'd be recommending zero at this point, I will then get into a fight, potentially, with what the value is of that construction easement. So there's a dynamic here that makes this property owner different from all the other property owners in this area who will be impacted by the construction, which gives a reason to treat this one differently. But that's been one of our reluctance in the law department to cavalierly say, oh, sure, we'll make you whole, because it's...
So would they have to prove that it's not regular turnover? I mean, how would they prove that?
That's one of the things we need to sort through with the property owner, and obviously we can get copies of the lease to find out when it expires. I don't know whether the turnover, I don't know whether it's month to month. It may be one that doesn't expire until October, and the tenants say, I'm pulling out of here on September 1st, and by the way, I want all my security deposit back because you breached the lease.
But if it's a friendly taking, the lease wouldn't be
breached. If it's a friendly taking, this goes away. If it's not a friendly taking, we still have the fight with the property owner as to what the pro-tanto amount is, and then I'm either going to fight with this individual over the pro-tanto amount, which is the amount for the damages, or I'm going to fight with him potentially in order to get this agreement together as to how we figure out what the damages might be. And I do think at least having a cap on damages is a helpful step forward that we didn't have before.
So we have a cap and something that proves that they are damages rather than just a normal...
I've got to explore what we can do on that score, but again, I'm going to do it. We have to do this one way or the other.
Well, we'd be setting a precedent if the city's doing work other places.
I have not been aware of a situation in which we've had exactly the same circumstances that we needed a temporary construction access point in for projects of this magnitude. I mean, there's no workaround here. And this project has got to get completed.
Well, it wasn't temporary, but last year we gave the cell phone
$60,000. Yep, that wasn't temporary, but Chatham Realty was also one of the people involved in that taking, and we gave zero money to Chatham at that point because for a variety of reasons, and that's not selling.
Oh, because they have the cell phone growth.
That's it.
A clarification on time. Cotanto.
When you're doing eminent domain taking, the amount of your offer for the damage for the taking is called the Cotanto award. Now, sometimes the Cotanto award is what the
city believes the value of retaking is worth, and it does not include a loss of business. So you figure out what the value is of the taking, and you offer that by statute within 60 days of having made the taking to the property owner. The property owner is entitled to take that money, the ProConto award, and still has 3 years from the date of the taking to come back and ask for more money. This is exactly what happened down in the situation on Crystal Lake years ago, where we took the property.
So that's what happens when you let the friendly case.
No, that's what happens when you let the hostile case. Okay, so in that case, it sounds as though the best deal is to negotiate a friendly case. I would think a friendly taking would be good for this property owner because he would be able to say to his tenant, I don't want to give him money particularly up front just for that value. I'd like to take it back into what's his loss. And he says right now he's not looking for money unless he suffers a loss.
Okay.
He seems to be willing to give this to us if there's no loss. But if there is a loss in terms of his rental income or obviously damage to his property, then he wants compensation. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah. So is this agreement part of the friendly taking?
They're probably going to be linked. I mean, again, if you don't have to do a taking and the property owner doesn't want it, I know the council believes that they don't like to take property so they can avoid it. So I think the goal here is to try to negotiate a friendly agreement with the property owner.
Mm-hmm. Did you have something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, clearly a friendly agreement, whether it's a friendly taking or a friendly agreement, would be preferable. But I guess my question is, let's assume that a tenant often leaves.
Mm-hmm.
He says he's leaving because the workers are walking across his driveway. But he's really leaving because of the project being done. Do we have any recourse here?
Well, That's what we've been trying to negotiate our way through. And again, I think the inclination is to accept his statement with a cap on it that the reason the tenant has left is regardless, let me put it this way, property owner wants to get to yes and wants to do it because if regardless of why this tenant left, if the tenant left before the end of the lease, he wants to be compensated for it.
So we're in a position because we need to go across this property of essentially compensating him if any of his tenants leave during any of the times that we're there for any reason, as long as they say that it's because the workers are walking across the driveway.
So I don't know if it's
any reason. He's got to have some burden of
truth. I know, yes, and that's what we've got to wrestle with. But
I think we have to get some
way of verifying that the tenant vacating is related to the construction and the project of the
building. Or to the driveway and not just the construction.
Well, I'd like to interject if I could, because we need to wrap this up in a few minutes, because we're meeting jointly with P&F. If there's ever a reason for a taking, and it's a temporary taking, for the purpose of essential construction, not even just necessary, but any really critical work that has to get done, and shouldn't be delayed, this would be it. I think all we're being asked to do is to confirm whether the city should pursue a taking so that the city is prepared in the event that we cannot reach a friendly agreement with this owner, which is being worked on. And this has to be done quickly so that we don't delay the construction any further. I have no idea how long it's going to take you to put the papers together. I, for one, am willing to trust that Rita and those who are working on this are going to make sure that there's clear language that says what the process needs to be to show loss.
Mm-hmm.
That's so, my 2 cents, and I would like to get the item.
I'm just trying to understand. Is there any dollar value involved if we don't do the friendly agreement?
Well, there could certainly be a dollar value involved. One of the things we're going to do is next week when Thomas gets back in town, and I've got to go to finance as well, ask them to do an appraisal on what a temporary taking would be. And I still think it would be a very small amount, because you're talking about a piece of land which is 10 feet wide. It's 11 feet wide. Some of the land is already in a driveway. I'm very pleased to know that we're not talking about having equipment down on this property. I don't know whether there'll need to be a construction fence put up. There probably would be, but that might be able to be placed very close at the end of the day to the bridge itself, so that most of the property is actually still accessible. We're not coming anywhere. That use of that land will not in any way actually impair the tenant's rights to use their home, to get access in and out. They may not have quite enjoyment, but that's not because of the temporary my tendency would be to say that there is very low value, and I'd probably put a zero dollar on it.
But we can negotiate that.
So if we could work
out a friendly deal, we could structure it so there's no need for an appraisal. Everybody agrees there's no value in the temporary easement, so we get rid of that and to make it part of the deal. And that's, you know,
that's the friendly taking.
No, that would be a side agreement. You know, we could make it clear that there's no value, so that he can't say he wasn't compensated, so that we don't even have to spend money on him.
And that would be fine. That's the goal. But I can't give you those answers tonight because I don't have them. But I need to vote tonight in order to be able to get to the board by 2:15.
I believe we have a motion to approve from Councilor Albright.
But if we specify friendly or thoughtful or just saying a taking.
I would certainly, if it's a motion to take, conditioned on continued negotiations with the property owner to try to resolve this short of a taking, that would be...
So we'll put in a hostile taking, because everybody just needs to know that.
Yeah.
And they could still come after the city if we do a hostile taking for damages. We've got to understand that.
But certainly our intent is to not do it hostilely. Our intent is to get an agreement that we think is fair and
to get moving.
Yeah.
Understand.
We're going to talk about this finance. Our next item is in joint meeting with Programs and Services Committee, who are
not leaving.
Okay. So we are going to go back to item number 357-16, which is the Community Preservation
Can you turn down the temperature one more?
We spent all kinds of money to drain it.
For the record, item number 357-16 is the Community Preservation Committee recommending the appropriation of $2,500,000 from the CPA's Open Space and General Reserves or Fund Balance to the Parks and Recreation Department for the rehabilitation of the new Tyler Playground, Winchester and Denham Streets, as described in the proposal submitted to the Community Preservation Committee in November of 2015.
We've been joined by the Programs and Services Committee Chair, Councilor John Wright. Would you like to introduce your committee for the record?
Yes, this is Councilor Schwartz, Councilor Sangiro, Councilor Larry, Councilor Arkansas, and Councilor Baker.
Excellent, thank you. So we are joined by Alex Anderson and Okay. So who's joining us to present? Susan
Lee's
over there.
Okay.
Come right here.
Better than the alternative. Yeah. Jim Robinson, Chair of CPC. Thank you for being here tonight to listen to this exciting proposal. What we have is a proposal to spend $2.5 million. This is a CPC fund of a little over $3.3 million on a tremendous rehab of the New Highlands Playground. For anybody who's been there recently, it's a fantastically located park that is way underused because it's flooded and underinvested. We think that we're going to be able to, leveraging or supporting most of this rehab here, 75%+, that it is going to create one of the best parks in Newton. And that's what the CPC is for, is to take a renovation that would be ho-hum and mundane and take it to the next level. And that's what we think this does.
And is that it?
I think that's it. Questions if you have them.
That's it. Okay.
Would Commissioner DeRubis like to add anything to this before we open the discussion?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a very exciting project for us. This has been on tap for a long period of time. We identified this site back on the master plan back in 05. We started work on it a couple of years after that, and it's been out there that long. It is a total rehab of the entire site, and at this point, the 2.5 is going to get everything done that we have to get done there, short of the lights in the building. And we plan on doing some fundraising for that, and we will run conduits so those two facilities, those two pieces can be easily added. And we think we have some people out there that are very interested in that part of being reused and some possible private benefactors as well. So again, as Jim said, it's a very exciting project and one strongly needed at that site. So the rehab of the field would be new. There's a tennis court there, there's a basketball court that would be redone. There's the addition of a building in lieu of right now what you see along the street on Winchester is an old trailer and an old building which are going to go and be replaced by some walkways and some nice plantings along that area. So they're much, never really had it. The interesting thing about the Highland Playground, it's never really had a formal entrance. Nobody knows quite yet to go into that site. I think once we get this done, you're going to know where to enter the site.
Thank you. Vicki, Carol, Susan, Lenny, and jump in. A question and then a comment.
Jim mentioned that 75% of the cost would be taken care of by CPC. Where is the other 25 coming for, just for the record?
I think that it's going to be phased and raised with a combination of city and private dollars. That was our understanding.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and the comment that I have is that the WorkFit is really excited about this. We think this is a great project. It's wonderful to have this it draws from all over, not just Newton Highlands, but it draws from all over, and we think that once the work is done, it will in fact be a very well used playground.
Carol?
I can speak from experience because my son used to play baseball there, but it's even dangerous walking in there. My question is the parking. Is that part of this project?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, when you say parking, you're talking about Upland Road extension or the actual, the proposed, the 27 stages proposed on the park.
Okay.
Which we're basically taking away. Right now is an enter off of Jedham coming in on the Upland Road extension. You'll see that right at the beginning on the right hand side, there's like 10 or 15 spaces there that are really recreation land. We're recapturing that land. Rather than have the spaces there, that'll be green space. Spaces will go into a spot next to the play structure and next to the tennis court. 27 spaces, plus parking along Upland Extension,
okay.
Which we're going to recapture. You've already started to recapture that, by the way.
Good, because it's one big pothole.
Yeah.
And, all right, well, that's...
The street is outside the purview of the construction, but we've worked with CPW and they're on board to get this done.
Well, I'm thrilled that it's finally been done, and I'm thrilled that there are massive funds and at the appropriate time on approval. Okay. I think
we
might have a few people who
want
something
before,
so it's money
then,
Susan.
I don't
see
them. All right. So, I know you've provided us with plans. It looks like basically the football field is going to remain where it is now, and the baseball field is going to remain where it is.
The baseball field, Councilor Gentile, would be, it's going to go from a regulation baseball field to a little league field.
Going to become a little league
field.
Okay. And is this regular turf?
No synthetic,
right? Okay. The only other thing I wanted to mention, and I know that you would do this anyway, but if people are willing to contribute money to help make up the shortfall, whether it be individuals or leagues, I hope that they will. It'll be made clear that there is no preference in terms of use of the field or anything like that. That they do it with the understanding that the Parks and Recreation Department will determine how the field is to be used in the permits, and that there's no special consideration because they made a financial contribution. Is that the plan?
That is correct.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
So I'm thrilled that you're finally getting to do this because I know it's been on the drawing board for a very long time. But there was a letter from the League of Women Voters in the packet, and I was wondering if you would address it was to Alex, and I don't know if you'd ask him questions about whether he saw or, you know, there are like six questions. Have they been addressed in this process?
We look forward to those letters. We generally go over every single one when they come in. We find them very short.
So the first one is, how will the price be reconditioned? Or, you know, what costs are involved in keeping it up?
Well, it's already on our radar screen because it's an existing park, albeit it's no idea what it's going to be. So there will be some more work that will happen, but it's already on the grass cutting schedule. Fields are already being maintained. There is a regulation baseball field that gets maintained. Football field is already existing, so basically we already have the money in place to deal with that, so we would maintain this cycle.
So you won't need it? No.
Okay.
There was another concern that there weren't enough community folks involved, but I kind of think that there were a lot of community folks involved.
During this process, we had massive support from across the city.
I think I remember improved lighting, allow more use of the field, was another question.
Yes. The question, will it?
Yeah.
Yes. And right now, what's existing on the football field are probably 20-foot lights that are just sufficient for practice, not sufficient for game use. The lights we're proposing would be game use.
Okay. So question four was, we appreciate the thinking that Parks and Rec put into the topic of flooding and stormwater. Work on the soils and culverts to be encouraged parks and rec to join suggested. Parks department's done a fantastic looking at how parks and rec runs can double in stormwater reports. Is that
taken into consideration? Stormwater was looked at, and there's been drainage issues at that site for many, many years. And one of the reasons that we appreciated the C5 that we got from CGC is the first thing that has to be dealt with at the site is drainage. So I think we'll take that into consideration, obviously, because there is drainage issues that need to be rectified.
So,
okay,
so make it part of the drainage. Solving drainage problems larger than the parking, perhaps. And two more was
Parking? Do you know if that's enough parking to meet your expectations for parking?
Once we recap the Upland Road extension and put the 27 spaces, I think we'll be in good shape. There's also a garage there, and we talked to Bruno, who owns that garage, and so there's definitely any overflow for a big event. Would it be possible to use that after hours? And I think we'd be liable for that. We need further discussion with them.
So, are you going
to
kind of a letter to
Bruno
about that?
We're looking at discussing that with him to see if he'd be willing to do that. But I think, as we presently stand, with that Upland Road extension and with the 27 spaces on the site, I think we'll be good there.
And we talked about the last one, which was partnership of funding. So we talked about coming up with a substantial amount of partnership funding. So I just wanted to make sure those are good. Well, I've seen a couple members of CNS who would like to speak.
Okay. So, Alison Leary and Dave Taylor. Is there anyone talking about Winchester Street available? Is there a local show? Is that a possibility?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I think it's difficult on Winchester.
I don't think there is any parking.
I think what's happened there is the dirt is they park on side streets often.
Okay. So I'm certainly prepared to vote for the funding. I'm very happy to hear that that's being in service. My concern is that we would go out to this plan for so many years. And it sounds like you have a plan to
Do you know if it's during the plan for CIP funding? Yes, part of the fundraising, and then going forward? Possibly. I mean, one of the things that's been currently in my CIP is lights up of the other sites throughout the city, places like Tallarin, Fort Day Park. Those lights are in CIP, so there's a potential that these lights — I've also spoken to the leads, and I think there's some strong interest in moving forward already, so — but it could show up in CIP as well.
Okay. I'm just concerned that so much of this year's funding is, and I didn't want to see that as president. So, I guess when you get rid of junk Range Rovers, I think that will open up a lot of parking as well. Passengers.
We agree.
Yeah, people. So, thank you very much.
Hi. So, this is a park that I actually use quite often with my kids, and it's right near my house. I drive by it quite often, and to, in terms of the community, it's one that draws from the entire city, and so it's a real benefit to the entire city because it's such a good space, and for there to be life without having a community that is advanced, I think it's just terrific. And the media butters, I talked to many of them, and a lot of them wanted to come here. I said they didn't come. I've been working with John and Bob and Carol, and so we talked about that, and we just feel like, we know that the community is involved, and they want this. They've wanted it for a while, so I think they're a little bit exhausted from it. And then in terms of parking, I can tell you that on Denham Street is where a lot of the overflow parking happens, because that is quite wide. So at just about every Saturday for the past 6 weeks, we've seen cars lined up. And it's actually okay for one of the common measures. And I think when the parking, the 27 spots plus the parking on Upland extension is free, there's been plenty of parking. And that garage that Bob had mentioned, I didn't realize that it wasn't usable, but I and all my friends, we always park there. because on Saturdays when you have a lot of, or in the evenings when there's a lot of events, it's empty. So I do think that we'll probably be amenable, but it's one thing that we'll be working on. And in terms of the additional funding, I'll be working on it. Knocking on doors and I know John will as well. So.
Okay. Thank you. Ken.
So I apologize for being late. I had a appeal across the hall on CSMT. I'm going to talk about Bob and my favorite subject, which is Cinta.
Yeah.
Is that part of it?
No,
I'm good.
All right. Anyone else? a federal lawsuit.
Does anybody have anything, any current movement by making them just exclusively ruling?
No. The fact that we have, there's 9 regulation baseball fields throughout the city. So, as I said earlier, this is going to change out from a regulation baseball field to a little league field. But there are a couple of these regulation fields right now that don't get a lot of use because they're not in the best shape. I've had money put into the budget through the executive department, which I greatly appreciate, to deal specifically with regulation baseball fields. So the fact that we can bring up places like Cabot, Newton Center, and get those back to where they should be, I think we'll not create a burden by taking away this one field, which has basically been unplayable for the last 2 or 3 years.
Len?
So, but on that point with the league, I mean, Little League is consolidating big time. So I'm surprised to hear that we're building another Little League field.
I think prior to the consolidation, this is one of the discussions we've had about the Little League field there. And even though they've consolidated, they haven't cut back their field. So they're still utilizing a lot of fields throughout the city. And I think we talked about this field and the fact this was prior to Lions having lights.
Yep.
And what we said was we felt this would be the central Little League field for not only back then it was 5 Little Leagues, now it's 2. Both the Southeast would use this, and I could see Newton Little League, which is west central and
north,
would use it as well. So I think it'll basically be Southeast home field, but I think there's definitely going to be a situation where there's all the Little Leagues will get in.
So
give
I was going to say, so if we're going to build this new, then it should be the premier field. Major should be using it.
Absolutely.
And then the other fields would be practice fields and the lower levels.
Right.
All right, that works.
Yes.
And then the only other thing on the funding, it's a lot of fundraising to get $800,000, so that's not going to happen. But, and I know there's been some questions about, you know, the city's commitment. Well, CPA is the city, I just would like to remind people, it's your money that's funding this with the $2.5 million of CPA funds. So it's the taxpayers' money, but also the quote city, meaning the administration. I'm not going to talk for them, but I think that they recognize that the most inexpensive way to do the entire project is to get it done at the same time. Otherwise, if you go in and do 75% of the work and then go back to do the lights in the building, it's just going to be more expensive. So they are not in a position right now to say, oh yeah, we're going to contribute X amount from here, but I know that there's interest in the administration that if some funds become available, and it doesn't have to be CIP funds, it could be free cash, could be some overlay surplus, whatever. There is money that does tend to become available throughout the year. And so if we get lucky and we have some money, there is an opportunity to try and fully fund the project from the get-go. So one thing would be helpful is, I don't know what the time frame is, but as we get closer, we need to have another discussion with administration and see if they're prepared to, you know, make up a shortfall so we can get this thing done all at once.
I agree. And in terms of the time frame, optimistically, we're looking at fall construction. We're not, Carol and I both are not sure that will happen, but we'd love to see it start at that point.
So then maybe, you know, you can do part of it. You could do some alternates, right, when you put the bid out,
yes,
and see about doing some alternates, and then we can work on the funding maybe. Yes. All right.
John?
This isn't a long project. I was in the Highland Area Council in 2005 representing the Highland Area Council on this project, and I remember being at the Nationwide Auditorium just replacing cash and having the bid was completely behind it. It's also an interesting point because if it's 3 wards, it takes very few cars. You know how the playground is at the intersection of Ward 5, Ward 6, and Wade. So we have a lot of city councils behind it, and as we started the process, you know, but we went to the league feasibility study, $40,000. So that cost is going 2-3 years ago, and then Bob went to CPA for the construction documents. So it's been a long process, but when it finally gets done, it's going to be great for the whole community.
Thank you. Did I see? Okay.
I have one additional point. The project is wonderful, and I noticed John and David have been working very hard on it with Bob.
separate from the project, though, because there's a node that of transfer that's the intersection where Winchester and Route 9 access the, I know that's been before the community before, you know, there's some problems trying to fix that turn, that intersection, that's going to become even more important as more people can come to the field and that connection to the field at that corner. So I want to put that out there, that that's another thing that you're probably looking at.
I understand that we're looking forward to a transportation plan and a road plan in the coming year. This is a priority. Was there someone on the other side of the room? Lyle, can I see you? Okay.
Did you move it?
I would like to just say one thing. First of all, terrific. We were treated to a presentation on this some time ago. I can't even remember when. It's a beautiful project. I wanted to follow up just on one point. I'm glad that you took the loose letters so seriously. I think they put a lot of hard work and thought into it. And I'm glad Susan raised those points. I thought when I read their comment about stormwater storage that they might have been thinking about you're putting in these massive filtration units underground to help the drainage, to correct the drainage, get that. But you're also putting in an irrigation system. So is it possible, or are any of those cisterns, as opposed to simply filtration units, can you use that water? What's your thoughts on
into
that? We
can look at that. I mean, we have a similar situation at North.
Yep.
The cistern there.
I know.
And we did find a very significant well at this site, which is great.
Water's getting extremely expensive. And I think it would be, well, if we still have time, as you're probably preparing construction documents from here on out, I would guess.
Yeah, we'll be moving forward at this point. We've got them.
Weston and Sampson would be the perfect group to look seriously at that. That would be my suggestion. So I think our discussion seems to be wrapping up. Is there a motion in public utilities? I guess not. Leonard.
Well, since you brought it up, I always love getting letters from the league. Okay?
I'll choose my
words carefully. But I'm struck by, in question number 4, it says that the work on the soil control that is needed, and we encourage Parks and Rec to join Progressive Parks Department around the country. Does that mean that they think that our Parks and Recreation Department is not progressive?
I have no idea. I did not write the letter.
Okay. Yeah, I'll laugh, because I find it a little insulting. But anyway.
I think the cistern is a good idea.
It is a good idea.
Cheryl?
So I did make a motion to approve, but I want everybody to know that this really did start with John Wright. And we just thank him and his but years ago. And so we should be very proud that this is happening tonight. So motion to approve.
Okay. Public facilities. All in favor of approval? It is unanimous. Thank you very much.
Is there motion in Programs and Services? Motion for Programs and Services, Mayor Taylor, all in favor, it is unanimous in Programs and Services.
Excellent.
Thanks
so much.
Thanks for coming.
We are in
school
level
of financial. He's coming next week, right? I haven't seen the agenda, proposed agenda, but I'll make sure. But yes, the answer is yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I get the door, please?
Hey, if you go to Cynthia, don't start.
I haven't said anything yet.
Did you get the shuffling?
I had a dinner with my wife tonight.
And we had a shuffle some feet.
I was sitting there. He was sweating.
I'm used to how that goes, huh?
It's always freezing in Wendy's, but he's the chair. See, I'm being very accommodating.
Thank you.
We actually probably need Bob DeRudis for the waiver of site plan approval, or do we not? Is that you, Doc?
For
the Highlands Playground?
And I'm actually intimately familiar with the property.
And that was your project or not?
I was going to say that. You know, that was exactly my thought.
Okay, I think that will be a quick item, but then I do want to take up the DCU business. So 222-16 is Commissioner of Parks and Recreation requesting a waiver of City of Newton Ordinance Section 558 site plan approval for construction or modification of municipal buildings and facilities. This is for a support building which has not yet been funded as part of the rehab of the Newton Highlands Playground in Newton Highlands. So are we ready to speak to this?
So this is very similar to the waiver of 558 that we did for the field house over at the Cove, right off Tom Ave, over in Auburndale.
Mm-hmm.
I would anticipate a very similar design. One of the things that I mentioned to Bob and Carol was it might be interesting to see if that same architect, because it was a very successful project, would be interesting in kind of using that as a model field house and thereby saving some design money. Also, by waiving 558 doesn't mean that there won't be DRC involvement. The DRC was involved in the review of the design of that building in the Cove. And we would anticipate the same approach for this project. As such, it means the DRC doesn't just look at the building, they'll look at other things. I know there were concerns about drainage, that would be part of what they would look at, the parking lot, traffic, impact to residents, the butters, the lights, all kinds of different things. So it's not to say that we're bypassing design review, we're just waiting 5 years.
So to be clear, we would still have funding approval because we have not approved funding for that building, however the funds are raised.
Correct.
Okay. Comments, questions?
Is there any issue with this with bathrooms? No. There are issues that, like, code issues that you have to meet.
No, I just meant, like, and this might be apples and oranges, but I know when we talked about the high school when we did the building, because there was seating, I know it was a seating area. When we did the high school, you had to have so many bathrooms because we had so many seats. I just want to make sure we don't get too far down the road. It's like, I remember we went through quite a to-do with the high school.
If you have a fixed stadium is what really triggers it. The high school, there's no way to deal with a round. You don't have to put up a full year. But for something like this, we wouldn't have that issue. And the planning board has started to open up a little bit for waivers for situations like this. But I would not anticipate needing a major fix or kind of those.
There's actually been turnover on the plumbing board.
We got to get a that's good memory. I'm impressed that you remember that. We got to get a waiver from the state.
Susan, Mark,
just what's the reason why we're waiving something?
So I think big picture, the reason that we've done it in the past is that it, for a building that is as simple as this, and oftentimes a prefab building, there's less work that needs to go into it. And again, what it does is, especially where we have problems like this, where as many of the council spoke to, that has so much community support around it, the point of 558 is to make sure that the community has a voice. And I think with something like this that has gone on for as long as it has and has had so much community outreach and so much community involvement, it puts an unnecessary burden on the process. But again, the process from a design review standpoint is no different whether it's 550 or not. They ask all the same questions, they make all the same recommendations.
The building is cited on the plan that we just
Yeah, certainly from a public outreach standpoint, I mean, they've all seen for quite a while what we're looking to do, where we're looking to do it, and it's been, to my knowledge, nobody, you know, upset with it. In fact, to the point, I mean, every time we talk about what we like to appeal, people lose minds. In this case, they're very supportive. So, I think the building is a little bit new to you.
Thank you. I just wanted a
reason.
Yeah,
definitely.
Mark and
Barbara? I had a question. When you build a new bathroom in this day and age, are you going to do it female and male, or are you going to have gender neutral?
Female and male. We ran into this actually on our fire station project. We tried to get a waiver for to do a unisex bathroom in the public area because it's so underutilized by the public at the fire station now. And they wouldn't grant that. They want
I'm sorry.
Bungalows.
Yeah, bungalows.
Like I said, they've warmed up in some areas, not in others.
Not satisfactory.
I don't think we have.
For the record, it's not satisfactory.
So I have a couple questions. I don't think I have trouble waiving it. I know you're coming back for funding approval, but a couple of suggestions, or first a question. The orientation of the building, is that set in stone?
No.
Okay, because it might be better to put it north-south instead of east-west.
Yes.
And the quality of, it's going to be a modular?
It's a prefab concrete building that's then.
Prefab, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You feel certainly not modeled. Don't put that on.
So we'll have funding approval, and we'll get to discuss the quality of the building, the orientation, you know, whether you incorporate solar energy, any of those kinds of things.
Yeah, and, you know, a good example is when we did the Manor Road building, which is very similar. It's a prefab concrete building. The manufacturers said we don't recommend putting a roof on it. They don't need that roof because it's a concrete box. The designer view felt that was not wise, that we should have a roof on it, and put a roof on it. So orientation, another thing, it's not just about solar, it could just be, you know, if these areas are predominantly used in the afternoon, and you really want people waiting in line in an area that's collecting direct sunlight. So.
Roof side. So the final question I have, and I don't know if anybody else can weigh in on this, is why we need to grant a waiver, because 558 isn't automatically required for small projects.
It is.
It's automatically required?
If you are building a structure on public land, and the adult law department has defined what a structure is, four walls, a roof, then you are triggering 551.
Hmm.
So.
Okay, because I know that the temple has the authority to request the 558 review in time of uses, according to the way it's written.
Technically, I believe, and we would never do it now, if only 511 of the law would require a 558.
I meant the dog house.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
For the
dog
house.
Anybody else? This is 4-6. If you want to move it?
I'll move it through.
All right. All in favor? There you go. Done. I think we lost our next presenter. So I'm going to quickly go to, we should go ahead and get them, but I think the next one is really quick. 2.6-15 is transferring authorization to transfer that sum of money from public works regular overtime snow operations account to the public works snow removal rental vehicle building school.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, the
request is just to transfer $233,000 from the personnel ice and snow control account from personnel into the controllable just to cover $85,000 that's left in there for expenses due to snow removal. So in that account, there's salt, contractors, repairs to city equipment.
Okay. Any comments or questions? Or do I have a motion?
I'll move Scott.
I'll move the case. The
hopefully it didn't take
this. So we're not asking for more money. We've got to transfer from within. But this is it, yeah.
I'm
and
so for finance, can we just get like a full accounting of what our snow removal and everything related to snow removal costs were for this, you know, fiscal year?
Yes, we have that out.
All right.
Okay, we have a question. We have this.
I can do a simpler
breakdown.
Yeah, I need a simpler breakdown.
I'm not going to go there.
Okay. Are we all set, folks? We have a motion. Councilor Danberg, all in favor? All in favor? Eight, nothing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Item number 141-15, Attorney Mandelger. Would you like to join us at the table? Thank you for that. This is under the item of 141-15, which is about a number of us requesting a discussion with various members of the administration about how we're dealing with the gas infrastructure and its repair and associated concerns in Newton. But again, we're going to focus this conversation on the comments the city of Newton would like to make. That the council would like to make, and I'm hoping that the mayor would like to make, and I don't have that answer yet, to the DPU to help to clarify how to implement or how to enforce this regulation. And so as you all know, Alan provided us with a draft and has updated the draft a couple of times. Mark Lurado and I had the opportunity to review it in detail and made some comments, but this is still a draft. It needs to be submitted on or before July 5th. Would you like to take us through it? I think several of us who have commented on it feel that it's really well organized and we asked for something strong and clear, and I believe we, for the most part, we got that. And but we should go through it and make sure that everybody's comfortable with it. But Alan?
Alan and I met with the mayor yesterday.
Oh, good.
And I believe he's on board.
Okay. And why is it a belief?
He was pretty tired when we talked to him.
Okay.
No, I think he was on board. But, you know, it's obviously, you know, someone has the final say. But I think you're very positive about it.
Okay. Well, that's good so far.
Good to hear.
Okay. So, kind of walking through this, the first point we're making is on the DC, on the annual gas leak reporting requirements. Part of the recommendation is that the gas leak report filed by the gas company be submitted in an accessible spreadsheet format. We've also added a request that there be a section added that's community specific, where we've asked that these reports be submitted directly to public safety official at the same time they're filed with the DPU. Those are the principal recommendations. The other one, I guess, is important. They have been discovered that based on the first two annual gas leak reports that there's some number of gas leaks that are just missing. They show up as unrepaired. For example, at the end of 2014, in the 2015 year-end report, they don't show up at all. They're not carried over as unrepaired, nor are they listed as repaired. So the question is, you know, what happened? Where are they? There's an article about this in the Globe recently. It's hard to tell how significant a problem it is, but if you're trying to monitor repair work compliant for their mold. To the layperson, it's hard to see how a gas leak just disappears. You know, it's their explanation for it, but part of the recommendation here is to require the gas company to explain these situations.
I'm fine. Okay.
Can I ask like an hour, or do you want to wait?
Sure.
Because I'll forget.
Yeah.
Well, I was just looking on. Yeah, that was a question I just emailed to you earlier today. It's just to make sure that when we're doing from the year to year, so the next year, we understand if something's done or not, correct? And it in the paragraph, it just kind of read funny. Maybe I'm just not reading it the right way. On the, I think you're referring to the one.
What page are you on?
It's not to me because it keeps scratching, so I'm trying to do something.
Is that our topic?
It's the one that says annual gas leaks report should identify any gas leaks that were reported at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
It's bullet three, and then we go on to say the city recommends the proposal of 220, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Listed as. It says, be revised to require the gas company provide information on gas leak 1, listed as unrepaired, 2, not listed as repaired. This information should include a list of leaks by community grade, description of all efforts, and explanations for omission of such a leak. Well, is it clear in there that we're trying to understand what happened to it? Is everybody reading it that way? Or am I just not reading it the right way?
You're suggesting this language isn't crystal.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that if someone's concerned about a leak in their area and it's on a report, you're dogging it for someone else for yourself, and the next time you get the next report, it's not on there. I want to make sure it says that it was repaired.
Why
so any of us can go back, look and say it was repaired, it was repaired here, this is what happened, or if it just falls off. That didn't read that way.
I understand your point, which is, and maybe this isn't enough to clarify, that's why I added a description of the repair, that
okay.
I wanted to see that we that in every case there was a description of the repair.
Okay.
So things should be, the bottom line is, maybe it just needs to be said this way, the leak shouldn't be dropping off the list year to year.
The following year, if it's been repaired, the following year, it's not fine.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
it's like a list of repairs that corresponds to
the
one that was dropped off.
One thing. Another reason for asking for the of the repair to be described is some repairs are permanent. Many repairs are not permanent. They're truly temporary.
Yeah.
They're for the purpose of, you know, downgrading the seriousness of a leak. Like, the egregious example is when, you know, you have a Class 1 leak and they take off the manhole cover and they put on a perforated cover so that it dissipates the gas and reduces the... That's not really a repair. That's a, you know, a temporary kind of situation. Or they just pass the pipe as opposed to replacing the pipe or whatever. But maybe that needs to be clarified in here so there's a little more direct flow. And
would the change of the manhole cover from a solid cover to one that's perforated to let the gas out be considered a repair?
Well,
at all.
We just have to just describe the nature of the repair,
yeah.
Period, so that we know. Does that cover that stuff?
Yeah. It just didn't flow that way.
Maybe what we ought to do for three in the caption and then in the first part is to make a more affirmative statement. Something to the effect of annual gas leak report should identify each and every leak that has been reported in this year or prior years that has not been, and something to the effect of any prior year's reports which have not been
permanently repaired.
So each annual report shall include all gas leaks from the current year as well as any gas leaks which were not permanently repaired in prior years. And then you could go on to say in your recitation, because I think this guy's right. List is unrepaired at the end of the year, not list is repaired on anything. It's just confusing language.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what the intent is. I think you can craft it to be more affirmative. I do think the addition at the end helps with that. And I didn't pick up on that earlier, so that's all.
Okay, I'll take a shot at clarifying that. I'm not sure. And I really asked them about the summer.
I mean, I think certain repairs are meant to be permanent. They fix it. They're not going to last forever. But they're designed to hopefully last the life of whatever you're fixing.
Well, this might be a conversation we take offline, but certainly many of us have experienced the gas company coming back to the same street over and over and over again and digging up the same pipe and continuing to put band-aids on it, essentially, as opposed to replacing a main that's really seriously leak prone. That's why I thought a description of repair might be useful to us, so we can keep track of exactly what happened. I don't know, I understand your concern about using the word permanent. Can you try to
have something?
Yeah, I'm willing to get too specific on that sort of detail because it's a fairly technical area.
Maybe you could
talk about the condition of the yeah, we have a language in there about asking for a description of repairs. I think the description covers it, because if they come back and say, we put a, you know, what'd you say, the cover on it.
That's
we got a few dogs on this town, but we're going to be all over him to go after them to make sure it's permanent, you know what I mean? So,
yeah, I mean, one example of that.
I don't think we should bog down what we put in the comment.
Okay. So the first sentence, I like the idea of making it more affirmative. Maybe we don't use the word permanent, but we make clear that we want a description of each repair that has been completed in any given year. Is that enough for you, Alan?
Yeah.
Okay. Vicki?
In the section, I think it's on pages 10 and 11, that deals with the protection of shade trees, can you remind me whether grade 1 or grade 3 is the worst?
Grade 1.
I'll wait till we get there.
I appreciate that. Mark, you have something else on this?
No, I'll wait. If you want to wait for the entire document to come out.
Well, I don't mind people asking questions on the way, but I just wanted to stay in the same place so that we're...
Okay, the next thing has to do with public safety officials' right to ask for a reevaluation of a grade 2 leak. The statute and the regulation simply give the public safety official the right to request. They don't spell out any detail how to make the request, what the gas company has to do once it receives the request, what recourse the public safety official has if the reevaluation is not too pleasant. So what we've done is just add a section on process, just to better explain the different steps here in the reevaluation request and what the gas company must do.
Questions or comments on that one? If members of the DCW have, does that sound right with you?
Yeah, that's fine. I think the highest group is just
fine. Anybody else?
I'll turn off some of that.
Okay, so we want to go to the next item?
All right. The next item, the DQ regulations create a process for a gas company to ask for an exception to the rules. The problem is that the only thing that's in the rules are restatements of gas company statutory obligations. So it didn't seem right or proper that a gas company could ask the DPU to give it a pass on statutory obligations.
Mm-hmm.
So we made the point that we don't think the department has that legal authority. But we also suggested that if they,
When the river request for an exception, we've asked that the Attorney General and municipal officials be given notice of the request and an opportunity to be heard. Any grant of an exception should not be permanent. There should be some process for having to come back and demonstrate that you still need the exception. And these rules will probably have more things added to them than just the statutory obligations. So they'll probably use a new source for something like this, but it's not based on what the DC put out there. So.
Okay.
Josh, you had a team up earlier when you were talking about these sales.
Oh, please go ahead.
I was just going to mention that you may also want to include in the language that if the repair is replacement of the pipe that you identified, the length of pipe that was replaced. Otherwise, you would simply get a response saying that the pipe has been replaced, that can get put, or it can be honored.
Good point. So it's a way of quantifying the nature of the repair.
Yes.
I think trees is next. Okay, I guess shade trees. We've asked if this department characterize damage to a shade tree if it lived 1 week. It's a bit of a stretch. It's not what has happened historically. When we look at the statute literally, you know, it's a leak and existing or probable hazard to the property. Shade tree is arguably property, and if you follow that, the DPU should call this a grade 1 week. It is a bit of a stretch because this is one of these things where the gas company comes out immediately, they make a fix immediately, so they're allowed to dig up the street immediately without going through the usual permitting. It would be a big change to call it a grade 1 leak. But it is a way of forcing, if you will, the DPU to address that issue. Mm-hmm. And if they don't follow that leak, then we set up an alternative. Use your general supervisory authority to adopt some specific rules that will safeguard shade trees. So we've made a few suggestions, and I think that's probably the most we can realistically expect, but this is one of these things where an environmental group in this might say, oh yeah, this is how it's done in California. And the laws match up, maybe there's an argument to do this, but it could be extremely disruptive. You also have some people complaining that there's too much activity in the streets because all these crews were out digging things up and because the gas was near a shade tree. So there's going to be, you know, pros and cons to that. Not everyone would be happy about reclassifying. That's probably the most effective way to force the DPU to take up the shade tree issue.
That would mean the utility won't be happy.
Well, it won't be happy. DPW probably wouldn't be happy with the ratepayer expense associated with it, just adding additional people to go out. We also have existing resources distracted from some other repair work to the shade tree repair work.
Mm-hmm.
So, just to give it a complete picture, I think it's a legitimate thing to ask for, but there are all kinds of consequences to it. And the reply comment is we're going to mention all of them.
Vicki, you have something on
shade trees,
and then Mark?
Yeah, as far as what resources would be required, can we hear from the CPW on if that would be an issue?
Sure,
I think realistically, if we looked at maybe grading those and a grade two, remember, grade one requires immediate action.
Mm-hmm.
I think for a slight leak near a tree, I mean, obviously it needs to be addressed, but a grade two must be fixed within a year. Then it can be scheduled. If we make this a grade one, as soon as it's identified, the emergency crew is out there. Regardless of what's going on, this could be a huge impact. We need to be careful of what we ask for here.
Yeah. So right now the grade three. You know, grade three is a grade three because does it depend on the size of the grade three? Depends on how much gas is coming out. Not on its proximity to a shade tree.
Right.
So if we could get all of the grade ones near the tree that are in your trees moved to grade two,
one,
is that what we're talking about?
No.
Grade trees moved to grade two. The lowest, the ones that are the lowest, the grade three.
I think what we're
trying
to do in this report is make a point.
Yeah. Do we have any recourse now if a state tree is killed and it's right near a leak? Can we take the leak that it was the gas?
Do that.
Try to do that.
The last meeting, and everyone
sort of
said no. Right, that's the sound.
Yeah.
So that would be the last meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're attempting to do that here by getting action or getting.
I think you might not have been here at the last.
No, I wasn't.
We were discussing this initially.
Yeah.
And we also had Donald before us, who couldn't speak about the settlement, so we're going to go into executive session and talk about it July 11th to figure out why there's a confidentiality clause.
So in that meeting,
we did achieve a settlement with the gas company for the loss of the 370 trees.
All right. I wasn't aware of that. So
yes. We did achieve a settlement, but the way forward is really sticky. There's a lot of interest, however, in capturing, a lot of interest in getting the gas company to fix this infrastructure, period, because it's a mess out there. And so this is just a number of ways to go about that by trying to put rules to the legislation that's been passed so far. Is that an accurate way of putting it?
Mm-hmm.
It is.
And how much clout do we have to get what we're requesting here done?
Very little. Mm-hmm. We're doing it anyway.
This is fair. It sounds like a long.
No, there should be some numbers. I mean, there are going to be
right.
A lot of people coming from all different directions.
Right.
And I think as far as safety, though, the most practical thing is for the DPU to adopt regulations that are outside the scope of the grade 1 to grade 3 classification. Some of them are very practical.
So why don't we say that? That's what I'm wondering.
Well, yeah, that's a matter of strategy. I mean, we can start with call it a grade 1 leak. Like I said, it's going to attract a lot of opposition.
I'm going to recognize Mark for a minute,
yeah.
And then Susan, and then
let's not lose sight of what this is and where we're going. First of all, Alan, thank you very much for putting together a really good piece. It's very helpful. Number two, I share the concern about calling this a class one leak, a grade one leak to be. I think you could get around that by saying in here, they're not grade three or two, and you should create another category for them. That'd probably be better than just trying to put it in class one, I think. It still highlights the problem. May I say a more general question?
Sure.
So I know we're putting together our comments. Is there any effort being made with the Mass Municipal Association, other cities or towns, to get them to weigh in a similar fashion? Well, why aren't we reaching out to half a dozen neighboring communities, showing them what we're putting together and asking them to sign up?
I think the fear would be that they take a significant amount of time
and talk to them once a week?
No, no.
Can
they sign
on with us?
No, write a letter. They can at least make them aware of what we're doing, so if they want to weigh in and say, we agree with what Newton says.
That's all.
I don't want to, we're not delaying what we're doing, but at least, you know, we have 2+ weeks to get some other folks to weigh in. I mean, let's just face it, this is all an effort to, they don't have, you know, this is a like a brief. They don't have to do anything. We're not
involved.
Is
MMA involved?
I don't know. Is the MMA involved in this?
I think this is an issue that they, well, they've been writing about it.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're commenting on the rules from the
committee.
Maybe they are.
I have.
Mm-hmm.
And what they told me was that they were having an internal meeting, they hadn't developed any positions yet, and we were kind of in the same boat. So I'm happy to...
Could you reach out to the MMA too, please? I mean, it would be helpful. They could see what we're doing. Maybe they sign on. Second, is there going to be any kind of any opportunity for oral comment on this?
There's a public hearing July 14th at the DCU.
July 14th?
Yeah.
Who's speaking on behalf of the city?
It hasn't been determined.
I think
you need to think about that very carefully. I would hope MMA would be there to speak and support us. That may be a good opportunity for other representatives of cities and towns to speak. And it seems to me that whoever presents at that hearing has to do so very forcefully. Very forcefully. Because otherwise they're not going to listen. It's like an argument in court.
Thank you. So one of the people I've contacted, who I've tried to get here, hasn't been able to come, is Nathan Phillips. He is the BU professor who's become somewhat of an expert on underground gas infrastructure in the Commonwealth. Mm-hmm. And he did write something, Alan, that I sent to you just yesterday, I think. He said it looks great in all the areas covered. I do think... he's making a suggestion that the volume rate of leaks needs to be incorporated into a broadened grading system. Reeve, I don't know who Reeve is, but you know, BU and Harvard and some other universities have, they've launched a study and they have been coming up with their own ideas about grading systems and stuff like that. So maybe worth talking to him, because I don't know that we're going to make sense of exactly what he's saying here, but he's recommending a two-part grading system, like a 1AB, 2AB, 3AB, relative to whether they're harmful to people or property, and also the, you know, I just tried to describe a class one leak to somebody once, and I said, you know, it's a very loose description, and it requires somebody's judgment. It's, you know, there's a likelihood that it may explode if it's a, you know, class one leak. What does that mean? I have no idea. So it's a pretty loose system, but so they're proposing a more specific system.
Which is kind of what Mark is saying?
Yeah.
I would support that because I think the grade 1, 2, 3 for
doesn't work well.
Yeah.
So we might want to just have a conversation with him and understand where some other groups have landed on that so that, you know, we're reinforcing one another.
Mm-hmm.
And he does also talk about urging that somehow the size of the leak and the amount in terms of the amount of leak gas be something that we ask them to record as well as a description of the repair. But when you're describing the leak, what is the nature of the leak and the size and the relative to its classification?
How recently were all the leaks looked at?
It was a couple years ago.
There was somebody that went around. Did that part of it, or did the city do it? Did the gas company do it?
Susan, and then I'd like to go through, make sure we're going to the end of this and talk about where we're going to go from here.
So, the same two things, it makes no sense to me to put it in the main one. And there is, and I was impressed by Mark Welch's comment that if it's grade two, it's good. So, it's clear that there needs to be a special category for that. None of those, and you have to say that in the document.
Okay.
So there's a little bit more here, and then we should talk about how we're going to, we're not, this committee's not going to meet again. We should talk about where we would like to end up before July 4th. I believe that, I suppose. So is there more you want to say?
We're meeting again.
Sorry?
Before July
4th. Sorry?
Not July 4th. So we may be meeting again, but it won't be before July 4th.
No, I was hoping that we could have a general sense of the committee come this evening, and that we could sharpen up some of the language centered around this is not going to be voted.
No, I get it. I thought you meant in general for the summer. I apologize.
Oh, I'd like to know that too. So are there some other points you'd like to make with us, Alan, before we send you back to make a few more revisions?
Not really on the comments. You know, just kind of a brief review of the DPU process. Yeah, we'll be submitting the comments electronically, probably on July 5th. That's the way the DPU is instructed, the comments be filed. These comments and comments by everyone else will be published on the DPU website. So you should be able to see fairly close in time to filing what other parties have had to say. There's an opportunity to file reply comments on July 19th.
What's the reply comment? Is it additional comments or future comments?
Well, basically, you look at what other parties have to say. There might be, you know, five parties you agree with, and you want them to signify support for what they said. If you think that some party is off the wall, they said something you disagree with, you can comment on that. What's the reaction if one of the people have a discussion? So, oftentimes people don't file a fight now. They just submit their own and stop there. As I said, the public hearing is July 14th at 10 a.m.
Yeah.
South Station, one South Station. You know, we used to say, I've been railroaded at the DPU.
I kind of want more comment about KC. Well, can we put in here, since the grade one is an exposure to something, it should be chaos. Grade two will get. So I don't know if we're ever going to be able to preserve these. Can we put in there a rule about compensation?
They have no authority to direct the council.
You know, we're just making comments. This is not like us making.
So can we say something about compensation?
We can say anything we want, but I think we just have to focus on what we're trying to get the DPU to do the DPW for. We're trying to get DPU to do now.
So why don't we want them to compensate us for this?
They have no authority. So we're asking the wrong people. We ought to be filing legislation.
Are you saying there is no legislation that allows DPU to compensate us?
DPU is a regulatory authority. I'm not familiar enough with the statute to know if they have the authority to do that or not. Alan's saying they don't, so it's a great idea, but it's the wrong form.
Okay, fine. We can do that too.
I personally think far more important is a very strong, cogent presentation on the 14th. How long do you get to present?
I'm not sure. We haven't been established.
Yeah, I think that's where you're going to see the commissioners face-to-face, and that's where you're going to have your best shot at getting them to do something here. They need to hear the magnitude of the problem.
I'm sure a lot of other environmental groups are going to be there presenting.
Probably get 3 minutes.
I don't know.
Over that, she probably gets pretty upset about banging the gavel.
Yeah, well,
thank you. Are you fine?
Let's try and get a list of the organizations who will be there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the Sierra Club, ELM, maybe the MMA, they've all been talking about this extensively, and to the point of, maddening to many people.
I just want to say thank you so much. You've been in touch a lot, and I really appreciate your work.
Awesome. Thank you.
Good job.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I will need a motion to hold the item.
I'll move the hold.
Okay, we have a motion to hold. All in favor of holding the item? Unanimous. And so, Alan, I'm inclined to suggest that next week, if you can, by early next week, last week before the long weekend, if you could be in touch with us and get another draft or final draft and that we would be submitting, but that we might want to get together with a few folks to determine who goes to the July 14th meeting, who speaks, and what we want to say. And if you want me to try harder to hook you up with somebody like Nathan Phillips or whomever, I would be happy to work on that. And if anything, So we're going to find Commissioner Josh Moore to discuss the fire season. Item 227-16, the final of the mayor requesting authorization to appropriate the sum of $13,129,065 exactly from bonded indebtedness for the purpose of funding the Fire Station 3 headquarters construction project. So,
all right, thank you very much. So first of all, I will say that I kept the backup fairly simple for this committee, but I know that we'll have quite a bit more questions financially at finance.
We always get the short end of the backup.
Yeah. Well, specifically on this one, because we've presented to the public facilities so many times on the project, really at this point it is a financial discussion. But that said, I will update you. This morning we opened the file sub-bid for the fire station project. So this picture, I think in the end we're going to be in okay shape. The bid came in $700,000 over. Now, that said, there's a couple things that go into that. We have $400,000 left in design pricing contingency, which is something that you zero out when you award a bid. So we're actually $300,000 over. That said,
can you say that again, please?
Sure. Design pricing contingency, when you start a project, you typically vary anywhere from 12 to 15%. And what that is, before you design it, you don't know what you're designing. And that gets reduced at each stage of design. And also, the second part of that is the pricing contingency is your escalation. So escalation to midpoint of bid. So again, as you progress through a design through the different phases, that gets reduced and rolled into the bottom line. In this case, we entered 50% construction documents with a 4% design and pricing contingency. When you get to 100% CD in your award, that 4% rolls into your bottom line. In this case, that 4% was approximately $400,000. Because our bid this morning, our file subs, which is half of our overall project cost, came in $700,000 over, that $400,000 dropped that down to a $300,000 bump. Now, that said, there's also the non-file subs, which is the other half of the construction cost. Right now, it looks like we're in pretty good shape. They're either going to come in on or under budget. We're talking with Commodore, they're pretty confident that we're going to be under. But that said, there are also additional areas that we hope to realize some additional cost savings. There's called a de-scoping section. That is something that that Commodore, our design team, and myself and my team will do. And basically where that is you are allowed through state statutes to negotiate with the lowest bidder. There's two things you do. One is you identify, do they fully understand the scope, and is there anything in there that just, it was an oops, and we can simplify, or there's more creative ways to come up with the same solution. Can you double count something? I mean, there are things in a project that decide that, you know, that can save significant money. If you just put it in perspective, the de-scoping session that was done for service saved us over $1 million. So, and the other areas that I was talking about, so one of our file sub bids, for instance, was metal windows. We only had two bidders on the project, which is which is low. If you have anything three or less, you're allowed by state statute to do one of two things, carry an allowance, and then we can deal directly, Commodore deals directly with the different windows installation contractors, or we can put it back out to bid. In this case, because windows are mission critical for getting winter tight, we would be carrying the allowance. And the other reason that we would look to go carrying allowance and specifically go after the windows is there were two bids that came in. One was $200,000 over our estimate, which is about the largest discrepancy between our estimate and the actual numbers. And then the second lowest was $600,000 over our estimate. So we don't think we got good bids on the windows. They also are two companies that we haven't done an awful lot of work with. So we want to reach out to the other window companies to find out, you know, why they didn't bid. The other thing, I'll just be blunt, we had 13 addendum on this project. An addendum, for those that don't know, is where there are design issues or design questions that need to get further clarification. For some trades that can be very confusing. Basically, you have to look at your base bid and you have to read each addendum and see how that impacts both the frames and specifications. So sometimes what that can mean, especially in a very construction-heavy climate out there, is that a contractor could look at it and not even open the bid, look at it and say, here's an addendum, there's plenty of work, I'll stick with something simple. I don't need to waste my time, because a lot of these guys, believe it or not, we're having to chase our current contractors to send us bills, because they're just breaking money to handle the bid. But we'll have time to change and delay. We also, miscellaneous metals was a pretty high one. We think we're going to be able to de-scope a good amount of money out of that. And then our HVAC controls, which was a point of contention with both the design of UA and myself, that number came in very high, to the point where we did a similar approach on Station 10. We worked directly with the HVAC contractor, and we were able to fold that work under their scope, simplify it based on the design review comments and my own, and we were able to achieve what we wanted with the same performance criteria, but with far less money.
How much higher is very high for the HVAC control?
$223,000, and to put that in perspective, that is almost exactly the same amount of money that the HVAC control cost us on service and injury, and they are three times the size of the building.
Who's bid was that?
That was House.
So we go back upstairs?
Yes, we have three options. We can either go back up to bid for that individual trade, which we could do. That would not be mission critical. We've got to build a building and get envelope tight. We can carry an allowance. We can also work with the low bidder. So similar to what I was just saying, we could work with Snowden, which is our mechanical contractor, and come up with a simplified solution.
Would
you
explain carrying allowance?
Yeah, sure. So basically what happens is for instance, windows, the estimate was $300,000, and our lowest bidder was about $500,000. We could carry a $300,000 allowance, we could carry a $400,000 allowance, and then award our DMP. Commodore then, working with us, can work directly with the different window manufacturers to come up with a best and final, and then award with through that the balance of any allowance if there's additional money gets frozen, and then ultimately earned back or go to the contingency.
Is that because there was only two bidders that were allowed to do that?
Yes.
So if there were three or bidders or more, you wouldn't be able to handle it that way?
Three or less, you can handle it that way. Yeah. Or you could have 15 bidders. If they all come in over your budget, you also reserve the right to do that.
That's just the question I had, Joshua. You're not going to go and seek an inquiry from the window manufacturer that did Station 4, right?
No.
Okay, what about the window contractor that's doing a client?
Yep.
Are they doing?
Yeah.
They didn't, no. But you could ask them to bid on it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And some of it is just to back up a little bit, it sounds like 2008 was a long time ago, but one of the things that happened as a result of the collapse was a lot of office staff, a lot of estimators, a lot of people that were not absolutely essential got canned. And some places just haven't staffed back up, even though it's been quite a while. So because they don't have that office staff, a lot of times it's your owners and your senior PMs that are trying to put these things in bid together. And if they got enough work, And they look at the addendum and they just say, you know what, I'll take the easy job somewhere else. So it may be as simple as saying to the window guy, hey, you know, we have 13 addendums, none of them impacted windows. So it's really not that hard to do. That's where Commodore is good. They have a lot of, I mean, they're everywhere.
Is that in fact true that none of the 13 impact windows?
Correct. A lot of the 13, if not, I would say almost all the 13 were NEP FD.
I don't know about anybody else, but just if it would help me to have some of what you just filled out so quickly and knowledgeably, to just kind of summarize.
Sure. I mean, a lot of it's only a few hours old, but
okay. So for not my committee, but it's still it's hard for me to follow all of what you're talking about. And anything going over our now $20.5 million budget is concerning to me.
I will not go over $20.5 million. I will not.
Okay. I'm good. That's the right attitude. I'm hearing you a bunch of things that are coming in over.
But the bottom line is we're only $300,000 over.
That's worst case, and I have $1.6 million in contingency. So that's why I say I'm not coming.
Mm-hmm.
All the others. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
When are the other set of bids due to come in?
They almost have them all in, so they're just putting them all together. I'm hopeful that maybe by finance I have a rough number on that. Mm-hmm. We won't have all the de-scoping done, but at least I'll be able to tell you worst case scenario. But the other thing I should mention is that we are way ahead of schedule on the early packages. We have finished our abatement with no change order. We are starting demolition now. The only other variable is the earthwork. That's where your change orders happen. Beyond that, historically, we're less than 1% in change order. So.
How about the historic building?
Historic building, we poked enough holes in that I think we're going to be in good shape. The other nice thing about that is that, you know, there's a good amount of work over there, but we're not really tearing into walls. We're using the existing footprint how it is. So a lot of it is just materials, finishes, and then your systems. So.
Okay. Any other questions? This is kind of a free-for-all.
So, Josh, so the question is basically this is it, right? 13.1, that brings us to
20.5. And I will do everything in my power.
I know you're right. That's not a question. That's not a question. I just, you know, part of the doctor, I mean, this is it.
This is it.
We're kind of beyond the point of no return anyway, so.
Because the temporary Marfit hut, whatever you call that, looks good.
I think you're right. We're beyond the point of no return. We've approved this. Obviously, we're going to want to keep monitoring as we're going along. But, you know, we just
got to
get it done.
Yeah.
I have one question that you probably wrapped up, but I haven't heard the answer to. So the last time we met on this, there were a number of questions, but one in particular that I still want to know more about is how the drain, the stormwater management got resolved for that long driveway, which I now understand is only 9 feet in elevation, but not 18, but still it's a ton of water going down toward that bay in a good rain. And what was the solution to ensuring that is never going to be a problem?
So we talked to this engineering, and as I suspected, similar to any time you have an engineer working on almost anything, they designed to 125% of rated capacity. So like a structural engineer typically does that, mechanical engineer, Christian heating, cooling. So instead of 100-year storm, and they're not saying exactly right down to it, but they're saying that's kind of what they normally do. So it would be a 125-year storm. Now, to say never, we could have a 3,000-year storm.
I know.
And basically what they said was, and this is where I kind of feel better about it, I guess, if you would, is that if we get to a point where we have an event that exceeds the capacity of the system that they have designed, it's not going to matter because your storm systems are going to be beyond their capacity, your roads are going to be flooded, there's going to be nowhere for the water to go even if they, you know, even if we wanted it to, is what they're telling.
The design review committee who thought that was an important consideration, were they pleased with the final
solution?
They expressed no concerns over it. They left us with marching orders. They said, we don't want crazy lighting control system.
Right.
Even on that front. They wanted to know about, I believe it was just make sure you have good oversight about the installation of the heated driveway. That's a fairly easy one. And they wanted us to confirm that the storm drain system, specifically the all of it, but specifically the stuff at the bottom of the drive, was able to meet the capacities of 100-year storms, and that we were doing everything we could to plan for the worst. And Nick Engineering, who they're one of the best, I will say, felt that they had done a good job. They went back and looked at their calculations, and they were satisfied.
And just for the record, I mean that it's not just a 100-year storm, it's the particular condition was funneling a whole lot of water down that drive.
And yeah, and to be clear, they're not, when Nick did not look at this as a 100-year storm falling on a flat surface, they're looking at it as a 100-year storm and everything that's touching the impervious surface of that drive is going right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just checking.
No, it is. It's just, it's a very good
question. When we have those kind of emergencies that we need the building that's designed to meet
in a rain hurricane,
et cetera. So, you don't want that to be something that undoes the building.
Yeah, and, you know, in talking with it, she's most likely to decide in kind of the physical situation we would be in. You would be going to higher ground anyway, and the storm drains would be beyond capacity. So you would be moving companies to a place where you could respond better to something cataclysmic like that.
So it hasn't been that long since the March 2010 storm.
Yep.
You know? And that's the storm condition that, that's maybe a 5% of what you call it. Maybe 5% storm, half a percent, whatever they call it. But it's, you know, our equipment needs to be able to function in that serious condition.
Certainly.
That's awesome. Yes, sir.
When do you anticipate the de-scoping session again?
They already started calling to make appointments for all the file subs, and that's already ongoing for the non-file subs.
Oh, so this isn't like one general meeting where you go through things?
No, because you're talking 60 different contractors that you have to meet with, and obviously we're prioritizing the big guys down to the little guys.
So are you going to be having a meeting and going over the results of all of that work? Because if you want, I'd like to be at that a particular meeting, because I'm familiar with a few different terms and things from other projects, but not, quote, de-scoping. So in case there are questions, I think I'd like to try and understand better exactly what you did.
Yeah, no, definitely. And
unless you don't think you want me to.
No, the wrap-up meeting, I'm going to tell you not to be there. I know better than that. No, the wrap-up meeting at the end is a good opportunity. You'll get to see what we did. The other thing, I won't bore you with it here, but after the DRC approved this, I myself spent 80 plus hours going through those plans and generated almost 1,000 comments. And I'll just give you an example of where, and all this tells me is that we could have been even more expensive as a project. Just a small thing, you know the retaining wall, the large retaining wall? You know that they wanted to put had to put a fence on top of it? Well, they created an entire 500, 600 foot foundation specifically for the fence itself. So my comment was, why do you not just attach the fence to the existing wall?
Who does that?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Really? Who said no, I think that
would
be a good idea.
What? Not like that.
No. We don't want the bidding on the Huddle Park fence. We do not want that.
It's one example. There are a lot of examples
there. That's still kind of like, you're still doing that like modular wall, right?
Yeah, it's going to take. There's a lot of other things that are...
That's concerning. So what stuff is that?
That would be, to be honest, for something like that, that's something for the race. It's a different story. We can start talking about, very detailed...
And there's construction manager at risk.
Well, so they were reading on the documents at the same time I was, so a lot of our stuff overlapped. They picked that one up as well. I can't even begin to explain the amount of time we put into it. And there's still stuff that we will address. That at the end of the day, we got to a point where I realized that I couldn't address everything by forcing Forest Silver to do addendums, and at the same time, the longer I delayed it, not only did it get more expensive, but I'm approaching winter conditions, which is big money too. Mm-hmm. So I had to eventually call it and say, let's put the thing out to bid, and I will work with our straight contractors to address some of these things. So another example is they have the retaining wall between the fire station and the Larry Salon. There's only, I think, a 4-inch elevation change. Why can't that be done or even a curve? So, that was something where it involved too many of the consultants to be able to resolve in a short time period. So we're going to have to, that's going to be part of our new scoping meeting, just to talk about what we can do to achieve those.
When is that wrap-up meeting, Vincent?
It depends on how long it takes them to get through all of those trades. Because realistically, here's how they're going to approach. They're going to look at it and they're going to say, what do I need to get winter tight? And all of those trades are priority number one. To be honest, something like, painting or resuming flooring is so far out that it's not essential for them to have a consulting meeting with them right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We'll get to it as fast as we can. I'm happy to share the results of all of that.
Excellent. Are we good? Yeah. Except for the fact
that you keep talking, you're going to have eight comments.
No, but this is not disturbing to anybody else.
I'm not happy.
I've figured out this common sense thing that an engineering firm that we
Well, the biggest issue